This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The American red wolf is critically endangered, so much so that there are fewer than 40 of them left in the wild, and they're found only in northeastern North Carolina. But the St. Louis Zoo shared a major success story on that front this week. This spring, three American red wolf pups born at the St. Louis Zoo, at just about 1 week old, were transported to North Carolina and are now growing up alongside a new wild wolf family. It's a first for the zoo and presents a rare opportunity to add genetic diversity to one of the world's most endangered mammal populations. STLPR's Brian Munoz talked with Regina Mazzotti, the St. Louis Zoo's Vice President of Animal Care and Program Director for the Association of Zoos and Aquariums' American Red Wolf Safe Program. Brian first asked how Regina came to specialize in wolves.
Well, you know, as I grew up, I ended up falling in love with some of the most misunderstood animals. You name it, snakes, spiders, you fill in the blank. Animals that I became fascinated with and really saw how important they were to helping keeping our ecosystems healthy. And wolves kind of always stood out to me as having a bad rap. You know, I mean, think of what you've grown up with. Little Red Riding Hood, Three Little Pigs. I mean, there are just so many stories out there that make the wolf sound like they're the bad guy, when in real life, they're not. And then going through and learning about ecosystem health and how important it is, and realizing that wolves were actually ecosystem engineers, meaning that they help keep ecosystems healthy, it just made them a huge priority for me of wanting to help them.
One of those specific populations that you are helping, as you mentioned, is the American red wolf. Why is it important to have these wolves in the wild?
Well, the American red wolf has a special place in my heart. It is the most endangered, probably actually one of the most endangered mammals in the world. There's only about 30 left in the wild, so they're on the brink of extinction. They used to be all over the southeastern United States, including Missouri, but now they can only be found in North Carolina. They were almost hunted to extinction. And it's a species that's near and dear to my heart because I'm a local Missourian. I grew up in St. Louis and spent years hunting, fishing, messing around in the Ozarks and camping and all that stuff. And it's sad to me to know that we have something missing from our ecosystem that should have been there. And so being able to help this species, especially knowing it's really a national treasure. It's solely native to the United States. Like, this is our wolf, and it's on the brink of extinction. Really made it rise to the top as a huge priority.
What would we lose as a community if the American red wolf would simply disappear? You talked about how endangered they are. What is at stake?
A lot, really. And we've learned this, you know, the study of ecology and how everything is tied together is relatively a new science. It's something over the last several decades that we've really started to understand how connected everything is, not just to each other, but actually to us. A healthy, intact ecosystem helps keep us healthier. Having large carnivores like red wolves, for example, on the landscape help keep deer populations from overpopulating. When they overpopulate, disease can spread through them or to our livestock that we depend on. They can eat, you know, those deer can eat crop down to the dirt, you know, and so being able to have the ecosystem health in balance and healthy helps benefit us. And we've actually gotten to see that in action with the reintroduction of gray wolves into Yellowstone that a lot of people are familiar with. We got to see what it was like before the wolves were brought back. Yellowstone had lost its wolves for over 70 years, and the ecosystem completely changed, and not in a good way. And when the wolves were reintroduced in 1995, trees and butterflies and flowers and species that they hadn't seen for years started to come back, and the ecosystem started to flourish again.
You mentioned it a little bit earlier. What are the things that have made these American red wolves so vulnerable? I mean, to the point that there's just one small population in North Carolina, how did we get there?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's something that goes back hundreds of years. As we started to settle on the landscape of the United States, as we moved into the Southeast especially and grew our population, we started to come in competition almost with animals on the landscape. And again, that misinformation of thinking that wolves are big and scary really spread fear, and so a lot of them were hunted to extinction or to the brink of extinction. When red wolves, for example, a lot of people picture this giant dire wolf like you'd see in Game of Thrones. Red wolves are actually this really relatively smaller canid. They're about 75 pounds. So they're smaller than a gray wolf in Yellowstone, but they're bigger than your 25-pound, 30-pound coyote. So they play a really important and different role in the ecosystem than, say, some of the other animals that we have here. And that hunting them to extinction, that misinformation, has led us to where we are today.
What's the biggest thing that people are misunderstanding about the American red wolf specifically?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what is a wolf, right? A lot of people picture what you see on TV or in fairy tales, right? This big scary animal that's dressed up in grandma's clothing trying to eat you. But really, a red wolf is a great example. Wolves are actually very shy. They want nothing to do with people. They run away from people. And I know this because I have had to go into their territory a ton over the years as a biologist in the field, whether it's going into their den to check on their puppies, whether it's going up to an elk that they just took down to help feed their families and getting a biological sample of it. They take off. They're big scaredy cats. Please don't tell them I said that because they'll get mad at me. But they are big scary cats. They're very shy. But a lot of people don't think about that. Or just don't know it, and that's totally fair. But being able to undo that misinformation or that myth about wolves is a big part of our conservation efforts. It's not just about the biology and getting the wolves back on the landscape. It's really helping people to understand, A, what they're really like, B, that they actually benefit them, and then C, that there's a lot of ways that we can coexist with them peacefully.
Yeah, on that point, what about agriculture? I think, you know, on social media, through talking to folks, you hear farmers complain about wolves and other canids decimating their livestock. And we're talking about this balance in the ecosystem. So what's fact and fiction around, you know, that space?
Yeah, it's a great question. So wolves, every once in a while, they do take livestock. It is very rare. If you actually look at the statistics on it, it's like 0.01% of all the livestock in the U.S. You actually have more of a chance of getting livestock, have more of a chance of getting hit by lightning or cars or taken by a feral domestic dog that got out. Wolves are actually very shy. One of my friends, anecdotally, was a researcher in Yellowstone, and she at one point was observing a pack who literally ran by cattle chasing elk. Like, they don't want cattle. They will take it every once in a while, but if we can put in some of those coexistence techniques, coexistence means there are things that we can do to protect our livestock, and it greatly reduces any chance of them being taken by wolves. But again, that's one of those misinformation things that are spread out there is, hey, wolves are constantly taking it, or they kill for fun, or things like that just unfortunately are not true. So being able to share that story. And actually, on the other side of things, I actually think wolves can benefit a lot of our farmers and ranchers because, again, bison and elk and deer and some of those animals carry diseases that spread to our livestock. Well, guess what wolves eat? They eat the things that have, you know, diseases that are sick, and then they help not spread it. So by taking those animals that are sick out of the herd, like a deer that's sick, now that deer won't spread it to the rest of the deer that can spread it to our livestock or spread it to animals that are our community hunts or that spread diseases to us, like Lyme disease. And in addition to that, red wolves, for example, eat animals like feral hogs, which are hugely detrimental to crops. And so being able to have some of those benefits back in the ecosystem could be really important concept when talking about conservation.
So the zoo just announced that for the first time in its history, three red wolf pups that were born here in St. Louis were fostered into a wild red wolf family out in North Carolina. This isn't like animal fostering that people may be familiar with or, you know, may think of when they think of the word. Can you maybe explain specifically what that process is like and what that means?
Sure. Pup fostering for conservation, I think, is probably one of the coolest, most creative tools in the conservation toolbox. We had the Red Wolf program decades ago was looking for more ways to be able to help save this critically endangered population. And by observing wolf behavior, they got to see how caring the mothers were, how attentive to their babies, how much the family really took care of each other. And they had the idea of, what if we take puppies that are born in zoos, so mom has a litter, and we take just a handful out of that litter, she keeps some, we take some, and we sneak them into a wild wolf den and see if a wild mom can raise, adopt and raise those puppies as their own, because we see how nurturing and caring they are. And sure enough, it worked. And what's neat about that technique is we can release adult wolves into the wild. It works. It's a little bit harder, though, right? Because they've been raised in zoological care. They now have to kind of rewild themselves out. We know it works, but if we can take puppies and have a mom who's already wild, who already knows how to stay away from people, who already knows how to hunt wild game, how to, you know, protect their habitat, she can teach all of those wild skills to those puppies, and they can raise they can raise them as their own and really give them a chance for success. The biggest reason this is important is when you talk about endangered species, genetic health becomes a big issue, meaning when you get down to just a handful of animals left in the wild, you have to make sure that they stay genetically healthy and that inbreeding doesn't happen. The red wolves that are in zoos have more genetic diversity than red wolves in the wild. And so by taking those wild puppies and putting them into a wild population, you actually make that population healthier so that they're able to survive better and have puppies that can survive better.
How old were those pups when they were introduced into the wild?
Oh my gosh, we have to do this right away. So as soon as the pups are born, within 2 weeks of that, we do the fostering. And the reason for that is, when puppies are born, their eyes are closed, their ears are closed for about 2 weeks. I mean, they are helpless to the world. They rely on scent to be able to find mom's milk, and she's really taking care of them. And so being able to foster when, A, they're really little and there's no stress to them, but also those first 2 weeks are when mom's hormones are surging and she is so ready to take care of puppies. I mean, she is on it and she is very attentive. And so it's a great time for her to bond with those fostered puppies and raise them as her own. So the puppies have to be born in the zoo and in the wild about the same time, because they need to be about the same age. So whenever I talk about pup fostering, it's more about the logistics. I swear to God, it's more about astrology, like the stars, the moon, the sun, everything has to align to make it happen in terms of timing. But when it does, it is magical, and it is a huge boon to conservation efforts.
Yeah, and to what extent has this kind of introduction of red wolf pups into the wild been done before? I mean, how common is this?
It is very rare. It is hard for, again, because of those logistics and the timing, having to line up, and so few animals out in the wild, so there's very few litters. It is very rare, unfortunately, that we can do this, but when we can, we take advantage of that and get it done, because it's so needed. In the last decade or so, we've only been able to foster with red wolves a few times, just because there are so few out in the wild. But it's really exciting.
So on the flip side, what happens to the wild-born pups that are brought into the zoo?
Yeah, so every once in a while, most of the time when we're doing fostering, we are just taking zoo pups and placing them into wild litter, and that's it. But every once in a while, if we get to the wild litter and it's a huge litter, we will take a few out of that wild litter and bring them back into the zoo. And the reason for that is called cross-fostering, because we want to give those zoo-born pups the best chance of survival. And mom only has so many milk dishes to be able to feed those puppies. And so we want to make sure she's got enough to be able to take care of the zoo puppies and get those new healthy genetics into the population. And we'll bring the puppies back from the wild in that cross-foster situation and sneak them back into the den we actually just took puppies from and let mom raise those puppies. What's neat about that is every once in a while it allows genetic flow between the two populations to go both ways, which helps keep everybody healthier.
So what happens if the wild mother rejects the pups born at the zoo?
Well, so far, knock on wood, that has never happened with red wolves. That is how amazing and how caring wolves are. It's one of the things when we talk about misinformation about what wolves are like, that's one of the things that fascinates me the most. Their families are actually very much like ours. Their mom, when she is caring for those babies when they're first born, is so thoughtful. So she cleans them, she feeds them, she protects them, she's making sure they are safe. And then as they grow, dad's helping. He brings food to mom that whole time, make sure she's fed so she can focus on the puppies. And then those puppies grow and help raise the next generation of puppies, just like our brothers and sisters babysat us as we got older. It's just their families are very similar to ours, and it's really cool to watch.
That's Regina Mazzotti, Vice President of Animal Care at the St. Louis Zoo, talking with STLPR's Brian Munoz. The St. Louis Zoo announced earlier this week that this spring it had successfully moved three critically endangered American Red Wolf pups born at the zoo to North Carolina to be raised by a wild wolf mom. We'll get back to more of their conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm Elaine Cha. Let's return to Brian Munoz's conversation with Regina Mazzotti, Vice President of Animal Care at the St. Louis Zoo. The zoo shared earlier this week that it successfully introduced three critically endangered American Red Wolf pups born at the St. Louis Zoo into the wild in North Carolina to be raised by a wild wolf mom.
So I understand that cross-species breeding is a big conversation around the conservation efforts with American Red Wolf. Can you explain how that's involved in your work? And I'm thinking of Gulf Coast canids and other species that maybe had, you know, shared similar genetic pools, but aren't necessarily pure American Red Wolves.
So the history of the Red Wolf is a really fascinating one. The American Red Wolf is a unique species that's solely native to the United States. But when they were hunted down to extinction in the late 1800s, early 1900s, it got to the point where there were just a handful left. Red wolves naturally would kill coyotes or kick them out of their territory, which is great because you might have one pack of red wolves on 100 square miles, where in that same amount of space, you might have dozens and dozens of coyotes. So it was great for the ecosystem and keeping it in balance. It's another thing that red wolves do to help keep ecosystems healthy. But when they couldn't find any other red wolves, they would turn to coyotes every once in a while and breed with them. And that created a situation where they would have hybrids. The red wolves that we have alive today in North Carolina and in zoos are pure red wolves. And our goal is to breed them and bring back that species onto the landscape. What we got to see in North Carolina is when that population got up to its highest point, which was about 120 known animals, probably over about 150, they went back to doing what they do best, which is keeping their territory safe from coyotes, killing them or kicking them out of their territories, and really managing that space. So if we can get the red wolf populations up back and healthy, we'll be able to see them thrive again.
I'm sure this work takes a lot of people, a lot of time, and a lot of organizations working together. Can you talk about the collaboration that you guys have done to reach this goal?
You know, I love that question because while the animals are amazing, they are so cool. It's actually the people part of it that's my favorite part. And it actually gives me a lot of hope for our future. The collaboration on the Red Wolf program is one of the coolest I've ever seen. I've been part of a lot of conservation work. You've got federal agencies like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service who are working so hard to save the species, working along state agencies, working with zoos, working with NGOs and universities and all sorts of partners who are all coming together to save the American Red Wolf, because we know that if we lose the species, we lose the song of the Red Wolf forever. That howl in the woods that makes it so special and so beautiful, that important job that they do to keeping our ecosystem healthy. So every year, these guys that I just mentioned get together and talk about how can we make sure we're doing the best job possible for red wolves? What skill set do you have that I don't that we can bring in and vice versa so that we can pool all our resources and actually make a really big and positive impact? And I've worked with red wolves now for over 20 years, and I've gotten to see how thoughtful and kind and tenacious and intelligent and creative the partners are for the Red Wolf program, and we're making a difference. And this foster is a great example of that.
Yeah, and I think this is really exciting, of course, to see this come to fruition, but I'm sure it doesn't come without its hiccups along the way. What would you say are some of the biggest challenges when doing this work in trying to save the American red wolf?
Yeah, you are so right. Conservation of any species is a roller coaster. Just doesn't matter what species, could be birds, butterflies, wolves. It's a roller coaster, and there's some days where you're like, yes, I took two steps forward, and then the next day you take three back. But that tenacity and creativity is what helps us keep going forward. And I think red wolves are not immune to that, right? We've seen over the years where politics or misinformation campaigns have done a lot of damage. And being able to take the time and to bring our local communities and landowners in so that they really get to see the true side and the process of what goes on in conservation, they can be part of it. And finding ways to really help benefit our landowners, because they are the folks on the ground that matter. They're the ones that make a big difference on whether recovering a species is possible or not. Again, it doesn't matter what species we're talking about. They really need to be part of it. And I'm really proud of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and some of our NGO partners on the ground, as well as the AZA Safe Program. Community is our biggest priority, making sure that they understand are part of it and can have that feedback and input is critical.
How do you measure success in this program and these conservation efforts? And how do you actually track these pups and make sure, you know, things are going the way they're supposed to?
Yeah. So the way that we're able to do fostering is the adults in the pack have radio collars. They're called satellite collars. So that collar sends up a point to a GPS, to a satellite, and gives us a point on a map so we can find where the litter is, and we can tell when mom's given birth. And if that matches up to the pups born at the St. Louis Zoo or any zoo that is a partner, that's what lets us know, okay, it's time, we can go foster. But in addition to that, outside of puppy season, it allows the biologist on the ground with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to be able to make sure that the pups and the pack are safe, to be able to study them from afar through binoculars and scopes, to learn about them and their behavior and how they're impacting the ecosystem. And all of that information is vital, right? We're still learning a ton about our natural world, and the more we learn, the smarter we are in terms of being able to help it and make the right decisions. But yeah, those collars are really important. And then puppies, they're too little to put collars on because, you know, they're growing and we don't get hands on them again. So they observe from afar through spotting scopes, and they can tell where the family is going to be based on the mom or dad's collar, and they can watch them from afar and see how the puppies are doing.
Was there an aha moment that you knew, hey, all of these hours are finally working, we are on the right track, and I think this is going to happen?
So I've been fostering now for, a long time. And I do it both with the Mexican wolf, which is another critically endangered species, and the red wolf. And for both of those species, those aha moments were the moments where I actually got to see one of the pups that we fostered into the wild as an adult having their own puppies and running free in the wild. And knowing that that foster became the alpha of their own pack, have their own family, and are doing all the things wolves do to help our ecosystems be healthy, those moments, you can't beat them. And it's again, from the people side of things and how much we're working together on this, that collaboration, and moments like that are what give me hope that we really can make a difference in the world. We can make an impact and make it a better place.
You said earlier that fostering pups is one of the coolest things in conservation work in the conservation toolbox. What is it that makes it so cool for you personally?
Well, I mean, think of that first biologist, right? That first biologist is like, guys, you know what we should do? We should take a potato-sized puppy that's completely helpless and sneak it into a wild wolf den and hope mom takes care of it. But they did that, and they made that decision, and that they took that risk because they got to see how cool wolves are. For me, I think that's one of the things I love about it, and it also highlights just how beautiful they are in terms of their just caring nature. But I think the reason that for me it's so special is because it just shows that scientists are never resting on their laurels. We don't know everything. We're always learning. That's one of the fascinating things about science and conservation is we might think we know, but the more we study and research, the more we learn. And those scientists that that developed this program said, okay, we're not done yet. How else can we help make a positive impact? Let's try new things. Let's grow this effort so we can really make a difference. That's what's fascinating about this and what gives me a lot of pride, because there's so many examples like that with the American Red Wolf Conservation Effort that I could give that just show how, again, innovative this program is and why it's so cool to be a part of.
So, do you plan to do this kind of reintroduction of the American Red Wolf pups back into the wild again?
Oh, yes. Heck yeah. Anytime there's an opportunity, we're definitely going to do it. And St. Louis Zoo is all in on American Red Wolf conservation because we know how important it is. It's an umbrella species that not only bringing it back is beneficial, but it's going to help so many other species, including ourselves. So anything we can do to help save the Red Wolf, we're going to do it for sure.
Regina Mazzotti is the St. Louis Zoo's Vice President of Animal Care and is the Program Director for the Association of Zoos and Aquariums American Red Wolf Safe Program. She spoke with STLPR's Brian Munoz. Regina Mazzotti also shared that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service last week came out with new plans to further save the critically endangered American Red Wolf. The plan includes growing the populations in zoos and looking for new places across their native region in the southeastern United States where they can thrive.
This episode was produced, recorded, and edited by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer. Podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.